What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Cindy's Birthday Party, the hip-hop podcast that looks at rap music and hip-hop culture from a historical and philosophical perspective. My name is Danny. I'm here with my co-host, Eric Big E.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And my other co-host, who's also a co-host of Live from Zay's House, my boy Zay.
We back. Next time, get it right the first time, Danny, okay?
You just be glad that you're still here.
Oh, it's like that.
Me and Eric already had a conference call about you, dog. Yeah. I'm playing.
It always got to be the wild card that get blamed for everything.
So in our last episode, or the last segment of this episode, actually, we have been discussing kind of the beginnings of fashion and as it relates to hip-hop culture. Mm-hmm. Again, we want to let people know that rap music is the music of the culture, but it is hip-hop is a culture at large. It's four elements, and those four elements are, Eric?
We have break dancing, we have graffiti, we have b-boying, and we have, of course, rapping. So
there you go. So KRS-One has expanded that to add entrepreneurship and fashion.
Yeah.
And fashion, as it just so happens, is what we're talking about today. Mm. Now, we kind of left off talking about how the early stages of hip hop and rap or hip hop culture was influenced by other things. But now we move into a period where the rappers kind of turned the tables, and they're starting to be the influence in a lot of ways.
You know? Exactly.
When Dougie Fresh is talking about, you know, Slick Rick says, "Yo, Doug, put your Valleys on.
Shoes, right?
You know, and
I need a shoe horn.
Why? Because the Valleys always hurt my corners.
Yeah, right.
You know what's funny, man? I was watching an old Fresh Fest video, and Ecstasy from Houdini. Eric, you laughing when I said Fresh Fest, because anybody knows Fresh Fest is old as Methuselah.
Like, no
right?
doubt. Yeah.
Right.
So they pushing 50, y'all. They pushing 50.
But in the video, Houdini is on stage performing, and Ecstasy from Houdini walks out there with some boots on, and Ja Lil says to him, "Man, take those off. Put some real shoes on." And he takes the boots off, throws them in the crowd, and the dude brings him a pair of Bally's.
Right.
Wow.
He's putting the Bally's on, and he puts them on with his hands, and he said, "And I didn't need a shoe horn."
Right.
So that's definitely, he was making a reference to the show.
Right.
But now, I grew up in South Carolina. I never saw a pair of Bally's other than on TV.
Neither. The Bally's that I saw were tennis shoes, so I never imagined that you would need a shoehorn to put a pair of Bally's on.
Right, because we weren't even thinking about Bally's
right.
in terms of, you know, especially coming from a rapper, we're not right. thinking about hard bottom shoes.
Right, exactly.
We're thinking about Bally's as, you know, like what we saw later on.
Yes. And a lot of it, of course, saying sneakers at the age we were.
Right.
We're not thinking right. about rap, you know, being outside, being cool with some hard bottom shoes on.
Right.
The two don't even go together.
Right. Yeah.
It sounds weird.
Right. It doesn't. So when you, when you think of Dougie Fresh with the whole Bally thing he had going on,
right.
in my mind at least, I was like, okay, I guess that's his style, but right. you would not catch me dead wearing no church shoes.
Right.
You know, trying to play b-boy. Right, I just right. didn't see where that it fit. But, hey, that was their style, and they ran with it. So,
and,
you know.
And as many times as I heard the show, and I never really associated, even though he mentioned the shoehorn, I never, because generally with rappers, I always just associated shoes with sneakers. I never necessarily said the word sneakers, but it was always, anytime I heard somebody mention shoes, if you mentioned Bally's or whatever type of shoes, I just associated with sneakers. Well, so when I saw my first pair of Bally sneakers, that's what I thought Dougie Fresh was talking about.
Nah, right. He was talking about like
he was talking
shoes
about
like
Stacey
he going to
Adams.
The club, you know?
Yes.
Like,
right. Yes.
You know, and us as kids, we ain't thinking about that. Shoes were specifically for, hey, we got a special function to go to and we got to go to church.
It's Easter.
Right, or it's Easter, you know, whatever. ain't nobody rocking those shoes just out in the street with your friends.
No.
You know, you didn't go out to play with no church shoes on.
No.
You went out with your sneakers.
But Doug did, he did a lot for Bally's by mentioning them.
By even mentioning
them,
yes.
And really, you know, it kind of took them, because it got to a point where a lot of cats in New York were wearing Bally's now because Dougie Fresh mentioned it.
Right, you know? So yeah.
And that's always been the power of the MC.
Yes.
The influence that they could have.
Yes.
Is that they can make a song. Look, we're going to get to, and I'm sure we'll talk to at length, because like we said before, you always have to have Run DMC in a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But what Run DMC did for Adidas,
yes,
is probably the only thing that I can think of that may be somewhere close to that is what Jordan did for Nike.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, Run DMC made
a song, literally.
My Adidas, and it had one of the hardest beats
ever.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, hey, Eric, you and I know every kid had a boombox, and My Adidas was playing on every kid's radio every day.
Yep.
Whether you had on Adidas or not.
Right. It was that popular a song, and like you say, it definitely put Adidas on the map, because as a kid growing up, I knew of Adidas shoes, but they were more for soccer players.
Right.
They weren't
right.
like anything that an athlete, quote, would wear, at least from my perspective, basketball shoes or, you know, it was Nike, it was Converse.
Yeah.
And actually, Converse,
yep.
like,
Converse
was big back then.
Yes,
and, you know, and they've sort of been knocked out of the box because of.
Because at that time, most Nikes were canvas shoes.
Yep. Right. Yeah, they were running shoes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're. Other than the one, what were those court, the Bruins, they were called, I think. They were those flat basketball shoes, leather.
Are those ones, wasn't Kareem or somebody wearing some early Nikes?
I think he did.
It might have been, because I know like Dominique and Magic and Bird, I know they all wore Converse.
They were Converse, and that's what where Converse was a big name. You know, Dr. J wore Converse,
right.
You know, but Adidas for Run DMC. For us, from the rap culture, bringing it up, you saw Adidas and those shell toes.
Yes.
And that just,
all
like,
time.
Yes. Yeah.
And that, and the thing about it is Run DMC even influenced the style, not necessarily even not from Adidas, like Nike and Puma and Reebok, they all started making that same style shoe
so
they could kind of piggyback
off
of
those shoes were out before. Those flat-bottom shoes were some of, those are what B-Boys kids wanted.
Right.
Flat-bottom
Stan
shoes. Stan Smith,
Smith.
Old school Adidas Gazelles were already out.
The suede Pumas.
Suede Pumas, things of that nature. Those were shoes for B-boyers because they were easy to, you could break dance with. Nothing complex about them. No crazy heels, no crazy soles. Like, of course, today's shoes have all kind of bubbles and things of that nature. It's just a flat sole shoe.
Shout out
comfortable.
To the VaporMax Nikes, by the way.
VaporMax, no doubt.
And, you know, and at that time, because they had not become immensely popular yet, they were cheap.
Yes.
And that cannot be overstated.
Yes.
The cheapness of the sneakers also meant that they were easily accessible.
Yes.
So if you were a poor kid that didn't have a lot of money, you get a new pair of sneakers. Mm-hmm. I can get these Adidas maybe for $15 somewhere.
Right. Yes. I believe I got a pair of Nike Cortez. I can remember they were like $19 at some shoe store
in
Brooklyn.
To say that. The first pair of Nikes I ever got were $19.99.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And they couldn't tease you about them because they were Nikes.
Exactly.
So
you
know what I'm saying?
You know, nobody could say anything about that because, they were Nike shoes, you know, so.
But, you know, the story about Run DMC goes that they're on tour for, I think, I don't know if it was the Run DMC, if it was the Raising Hell album, I think it was. It may have been before Raising Hell. But they're on tour. They're at Madison Square Garden. It's sold out. The Adidas reps are backstage. Run says, I'm going to show y'all something. He goes out on stage and says, how many people in here got on a pair of shell-toed Adidas sneakers tonight? And the crowd, of course, it's 20-plus thousand people. He said, okay, take your shoe off and hold it in the air. And there's 20,000 shoes being held in the air. Adidas signed, the story goes, Adidas signed those dudes
right then
an endorsement contract because they had that level of influence over – you know, they got 20,000 people in Madison Square Garden. First of all, anybody who can sell out Madison Square Garden, which in itself is a big deal, and then to have everybody in Madison Square Garden wearing these shoes because you said wear them, that is – and that's always been the history of rappers.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we say do this, and the kids do it.
Exactly.
Right. And this is the funny thing about it because of the fact that Run DMC started it, you know what I'm saying? Like – every time a rapper came out, especially the new ones, they always wanted to kind of be different, you know. So they would always shout out the whatever it is that they trying to get famous to. So, like, when the rappers started wearing the Jordans, it was like, you know what I'm saying, I got these Jordans. So it was like it became popular. Now the shoe game is synonymous with rap. It's synonymous with
hip-hop.
Yeah, because
you can't. You're talking about sneakers. You can't do anything with sneakers if you don't have some type of rapper tied to. Even more so than the ball players whose name may be on the shoe.
Exactly.
Which is the actual the the height of influence.
Right.
And just as rappers did that with shoes, they did it with clothes, right?
Yep. So yeah, they did it with clothes.
When dudes started, and Eric, we had talked about this during the break, when dudes started shouting out Dapper Dan, all of a sudden, everybody is going to Dapper
one
Dan.
One of they clothes, the greatest fashion designers, and does not get an, actually, you know what, he's about 72, 73 years old.
And it looks like he's about 50-something.
Right, and he is still designing and making clothes now. Back then, this was 82 when he got started, and his deal was he was a booster, quite honestly. He shoplifted and sold clothes out of his trunk.
We'll call him the urban fashion designer.
Well, he was an urban fashion
designer. Well, he was, yeah, definitely no one outside of Harlem,
right,
other than, well, outside of Harlem and surrounding New York boroughs knew who he was.
Right.
And so when he started out, he's, of course, like I said, he's a booster. He's selling stuff out of his trunk. Eventually, it became a case where he wanted to be a wholesaler of his own and make his own clothes. But, of course, this is early 80s. You, as a young black designer, you're probably not going to get put on. There's a lot of biases and a lot of racism. Right. So he decided, I'm going to learn the game from the inside out myself. So he started learning about fabrics. He started learning about different styles, and decided to make his own clothes. And so what he did was, which probably would be copyright infringement today, but he started taking major designers' logos and putting it on his own fashions. Mm-hmm. Of course, nobody really said anything, I think probably because fashion designers back then really didn't even take it serious, nor did they even see it.
Exactly. Say, they probably didn't take it serious. I got a question, though, for you, E.
Yeah.
What were some of the designers that Dapper Dan would, like, give me some of the examples that he would use?
He had many, and if you go on websites, and if you go on even Google and just look up Dapper Dan, you'll see pictures of people with the clothes. Gucci was one. Louis Vuitton was another.
MCM, of course.
MCM.
Definitely MCM.
Most of the sneaker companies were now getting basically free advertising because you'd see a rapper with a huge Nike, with a suede Nike suit, which they didn't make, of course. They didn't make anything like that. So there's this dude with a full leather Nike suit. They didn't have no leather Nike suits, but this is Dapper Dan dabbling, so to speak, into his own style and then using their copyrighted, you know, logos on the stuff. And it was, you know, of course, inner city kids loved it. This is fantastic stuff, you know, so.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing about that is it shows, like, the streets always set the trend and then the corporations follow.
Right.
Yeah. It's just like street dudes start putting chrome rims on their cars. and then, you know, after 10 years of doing that now, you know, Mercedes and everybody else, now you can get chrome rims as a package.
Right, as a package on your car. Yeah. Exactly.
Because at some point they always realize the money that they're missing out on.
Exactly.
You know, and they say, well, hey, we can do this and we can do it official. Yep. You know, and Dapper Dan was kind of like that. Like, you couldn't go to MCM and get an MCM suit, track suit, you know?
As a rapper, probably.
Well, you know, like you had, look, the cover of Eric B. and Rakim's Follow the Leader. Eric B. and Rakim got on these fly MCM suits.
Yes.
Rakim's got the 5% flag on the back.
Yep.
And that was designed by Dapper Dan.
Right.
Well, unfortunately for me, because I didn't live up north, I didn't have access to Dapper Dan.
No, I didn't either, but I knew who he was, but I didn't either because I was in South Carolina.
I just used to go to the Greenbrier Flea Market, and they had the MCM suits down there. I don't think they was quite as fly as Rakim's, but had them.
Yeah, these, you know, trends move, you know, move across the country. You know, they may not be what Dapper Dan stuff is, but it is something similar. And if it's close enough, you know, kids are going to get it.
Yeah.
You know? So as long as it's, you know, right there close enough.
And we didn't care if it was pleather or not. We just rocked it.
Right. You just rocked it. Right. You don't care. Yeah,
exactly. Care. As long as it had the MCM on it, we was good.
Or my daddy say the MGM suit she got on. Like the movie, like Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. The suit or something.
No,
I see all them boys down there, see all them dope boys be wearing the MGM suits.
Yeah.
But that was a – and Dan made not only did he make clothes for he started when he first got popular, what year was that? Maybe 85 or 6?
Yeah, probably 85 is when it took off, because now he had clientele. LL was one of his first clients. Roxanne was one of his first clients, and that's how word started spreading with that. And although from 82 to 92 is a 10-year run, and it's kind of short when you think about it.
He
made a lot of money and did a lot of things in that span of 10 years.
And LL's was wearing the troop suits back in those days, yeah. Right?
I don't think the troop suits were from Dapper Dan. I think that's when he actually had an endorsement
right.
deal.
And
with
I think
troop.
That was on the Bad album.
Remember they had a pair of troop LL's. Like he had his own.
I remember.
Troop.
Yep, sure did.
I think the big mistake they made though was when they put his name on it. Cats just didn't want to rock it.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, it wasn't like with the Shell to Adidas. It was associated with Run DMC, right. But you didn't have Run DMC.
Now let me.
But everybody wanted to have like their own custom feel to it.
Yeah, let me hit you on that though. My mind wants to say that Run DMC had a pair of shell toes with either their signature on it, one of their like a face of them on it. Something to that nature. I could be wrong, but I could have sworn.
Wasn't it like a pair of Stan Smith that Run DMC had endorsed or something like that?
I thought it was just strictly shell toes. Was theirs.
Literally.
Yeah.
I remember seeing them in the video with the shell toes with no strings.
Right, no strings. Right, right. And the tongues all the way up over, right. Over the leg of the jeans. Right.
And that infuriated my father.
Right.
I bet not catch you with no shoes, with no shoestrings. Yeah.
But your dad was ex-Navy SEAL, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's also anti everything hip hop.
Right.
Like all of our baby boomers pops were.
Yeah, yeah. Which is also very funny. Yeah, that's the thing, you know, like I was telling y'all earlier, like my dad probably would not have been so anti-hip hop had they dressed like he dressed.
Yes. Yeah,
you know. But that was
my dad swore we were clowns, bro.
Right, like, but you know the whole thing about whether it was the music or the fashion was that it was very anti-establishment.
Yes. Yeah,
and that's part of what. Yes. Yeah, that's exactly the point.
Yeah.
To the hairstyles, you know, because look, we weren't the first one to have flat top hairstyles.
Nah, right.
We were
they
the first
did it
one,
in the 60s.
Right, but we were the first ones to have flat tops that was 6 to 8 inches on top of our head.
Exactly.
We were the first one to have flat tops with a blonde streak.
With colors in it. Exactly.
Right, so, you
straight
know,
had it, too.
Right, yeah, so all of that stuff that was part of, you know, that kind of gave us our own identity, that's also what the older generation didn't like.
Do y'all remember the haircuts that used to have the graffiti writing in them, too?
Oh yeah, if you had a skilled barber,
if you had a skilled enough barber
skilled
to do
enough
that,
barber,
right?
Man,
that, yeah,
bro. Like I had a haircut one day, man, and I used to have my little Nike sign on the side, and I had the high top with the dye in it. Then it was stepped on the side. It had the little part going down like on the side right there, man. I was killing them.
Damn, you had like a whole like Nike headquarters on your head, man.
Bruh,
a building.
I had design, man. Hey.
With the Nike on the back.
Hey, man. Like,
I had
real.
The Atlanta skyline on one side.
Right.
Yeah. On the other side.
I had the whole Nike sign on
Steve
that Bukowski side.
Steve
right
Bukowski throwing a football. Right. You had a whole lot going on.
A lot going on, yeah.
Bro.
I had Deion Sanders baseball and football.
And then to top it off. For one year, I actually threw a bantu in my head, too. So it was like, it was curly at the top.
You said a bantu? Yo, man, no.
Well, I wasn't playing no games. Hey, that's why I ain't got no hair right now, to be honest.
I was going to say, that's probably why you bald now. You got all that stuff going on, man. But, yo, quickly, just because Zay was saying all of that, okay, MC Hammer, and I'm going a little farther forward than what we, but I'll reel us back in. There was a Kentucky Fried Chicken commercial I used to hate, and it was on popcorn chicken. They were the first
advertising commercial,
and they had his entourage or bandmates or whatever you want to call them, and they had all kinds of crap going on.
Yes.
They had step ups and like flares. This
it was like nappy on one side and curly on the other.
That wildness.
That whole Hammer crew, they were known for outrageous hairstyles.
Right.
Yes.
And
I think that was part of what they were trying to do. Trying to be out there. Like
and
that.
I was so shocked that like Kentucky Fried Chicken went there actually thinking I guess the Colonel was still alive. And I was like, did the Colonel sign off on this? Because like, this is crazy.
Front, man. I hated that doggone commercial because Hammer had did some kind of move where he turned around
and
started dancing.
The chicken in
the
head.
Oh, a piece of chicken in his mouth.
Off.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I was through with him after that.
I was done with him after that, bro.
But again, that's somebody who at the time had a lot of influence.
Right.
And they reached out to him.
Yep.
But, you know, as always, and, you know, this is a running theme, is that when corporate America gets involved with hip-hop on some level, it always seems to – there are benefits to it, but they always seem to damage it on some level.
Exactly.
Because they don't really understand the culture or the
art. Right. Right. And to segue, perfect segue into more things with fashion – at the time, I want to say 85 and 6, because we were at Somerville High School at the time. And the Coca-Cola shirts got popular.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
So this is now corporate America seeing a reason to kind of let's get in on this fashion thing.
Right.
And I, quite honestly, because I had about 5 or 6 different Coca-Cola shirts. I had a bunch of them. Sweatshirts.
Yep.
I had one, actually, I thought was kind of dope. It was a little different. It was a gray, and I was one of probably the first people to rock something with pink in it and feel secure about myself. But it was gray and pink. I had a gray-pink Coca-Cola one. Of course, a traditional red, gray, different colors. But Coca-Cola decides, hey, let's jump in on something and let's benefit off.
And I think one of the biggest issues with corporate America when they take over some parts of the fashion, whatever the part that we may have influenced, it takes away from the freedom. Because like with hip hop, it was like you always wanted to start your own trend. So like I say, when in the 90s when Cross Colors came out, you know what I'm saying? It's like people were just free to just do whatever they wanted to do. They would wear the African symbols, or if you wanted to wear your big gold chain, that's fine. If you want to have a gold tooth in your mouth, that was fine. You know what I'm saying? It was like, I think hip-hop was more so about the freedom to do whatever it was that you wanted to do, and somehow it always influenced corporate America. And when corporate America took over that particular style, it took away from that freedom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was like, we're going to take this ball and we're going to run and make all this kind of money off of it. And it kind of takes away from whatever the freedom
because
the
they never really
have
it. The one area where I think they were not able to have as much influence was the hairstyles.
Yes.
To a certain extent. I mean, you still had stuff like people putting the Nike logo in their head or whatever.
Right.
But there were certain things you couldn't necessarily take the high top fade, dreadlocks, which for the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, cats are starting to wear locks as a hairstyle that is an acceptable hairstyle.
Right.
That's not something that you could easily gentrify.
Right.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Even, you know, a little bit later, of course, cornrows and other haircuts, but there was certain stuff we would do, you know, a Gumby. You can't take a Gumby to Iowa and have cats rocking a Gumby.
Right, yeah.
That was going to be something that only, you know, black kids who
inner
were
inner city, East Coast, hip-hop
were going
culture,
to be wearing that type of hairstyle.
Right.
You know?
And not only that, corporate America can't put any kind of copyright on a hairstyle.
Right.
They can't
claim
it and you know, utilize it as this is the official haircut of Nike.
Right. And that's funny because they always looked at those types of hairstyles as inappropriate. You know, it was like, oh man, you can't walk into our office and you got these locks in your head. They always looked at it as being inappropriate. You know, it was like, that's not proper. You're not supposed to wear that.
Right, but hip hop
because they knew they couldn't benefit from it.
Yeah, that is true. And but hip hop culture was the first time really that young black kids would say, well, you know what? I don't care.
Right.
I'm going to rock this anyway.
Exactly.
I'm on it. You know, I think about early Leaders in the New School videos with Busta Rhymes and Charlie Brown where they got their hair faded, but then they got it twisted on the top.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
I had one of those too, by the way.
The everything man.
Right.
Yeah, right.
It's funny because my mama used to twist my hair for me.
Right.
My mom did it. You know what I'm saying? Like, until I got too old, she was like, I ain't doing it no more. Find you some girl to do it for you, but nevertheless.
But yeah, but that's, you know, that's one of those things where the kids, the culture in particular, made the decisions. You know, like, remember Big Daddy Kane with the high top fade? He at that time they was calling it a cameo.
Yeah.
Because Larry Blackman from Cameo had the hair.
Yeah, exactly.
But Larry Blackman, I think, was doing it more as an expression of outrageousness along with wearing that codpiece.
Yes.
You know, because that
was
part of his
look.
Red codpiece on, and
yeah,
hair up on his head. But the rappers and hip hop culture started wearing that high top fade.
Yep.
Kid from Kid and Play,
yep,
probably the most famous for it, is that's just a hairstyle.
Yeah.
You know, and other people look at it and they think it looks crazy or whatever, but we love it. So that's one of the things too that I think that so I know we touched on Dapper Dan some.
Yeah.
Especially as the early and mid 90s, but as we get towards the or mid 80s, excuse me, or we start to get towards the 90s, I think we when we start to see rappers are becoming more affluent, more visible.
Right.
So naturally with that, the influence becomes greater.
Yes.
And, you know, we've got dudes wearing brands maybe that we never had considered before.
Yep. Well, shout out going backwards a little bit. Jordache. Things of Jordache, Calvin Klein, Sassoon.
Yeah.
Jeans of that era, mid-80s.
But yeah. Sergio Klein, Valente. No friend of mine.
Don't want nobody's name on my behind. And there you go. Those particular jeans, those particular fashion designers were not thinking of hip-hop culture when they were bringing their jeans out. They were thinking of fairly wealthy, well-to-do white America. Oh, hey, these are designer jeans. Yep.
And I think that hurt their long-term viability.
I agree with that.
That's why you don't see Jordache in this day.
Well, yeah, they did not embrace the fact that B-Boys were wearing Jordache, and they were talking about that, and they were wearing Sergio Valente and things of that nature. And like you say, they didn't embrace it.
And when Run DMC says at that time that they don't, Calvin Klein is no friend of mine, he's like, okay, I can't ever buy a pair of Calvin Klein jeans.
Exactly. Because Run DMC said
not to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and that happened to a lot. You know, I think about in the 90s with Carhartt, how they got hurt because a lot of cats were rocking Carhartt. And
Man.
They kind of said that they didn't want to be associated with rap and with rappers.
Exactly.
And as a result, they went right back into their little niche market where they had always
Exactly, which is, lumberjacks and people cutting wood and farming and things of that nature. But, Carhartt was huge.
Remember Patsy's line wearing Carhartt leather, mother bleep the weather.
Right.
Because that's how it was. Like, cats will wear Carhartt and it'll be 90 degrees outside.
Yep.
Yeah, oh, dog, I'm out here with a Carhartt jacket on looking like a crazy man.
Homeboy of mine, I was in AF, was with Kermit. Shout out to Kermit. He wore Carhartt constantly. And like you said, the big, you know, this is the winterized Carhartt. Mm-hmm. Bruh, it's springtime. We coming out of winter.
Matter.
It didn't matter.
See, now that you mention that, I never wore anything associated with Carhartt because we stayed down in the South. It was always hot. Hell, it was 70 degrees in the winter sometimes. So it was like, so that was never a thing that we considered.
And in South Carolina, we wear them, but it's, you know, in the winter, you just don't have that long period of time that you can wear anything.
Right.
You got, you know, those 2-3 months of cold weather that you have, and then it's just.
Well, what I'm saying
said,
is,
it's beyond it. It's too hot beyond that, but cats are still wearing it.
Well, what I'm saying is that northern reach, like, because you stayed in South Carolina, so the north, a lot of the influence from the north reached all the way down to South Carolina, where in Georgia, it was more so about, okay, well, I see you wearing this in your video versus the influence from a mouth to mouth.
And therein lies the thing of fashion and certain things like that. For example, like you were saying, bombers and Carhartt jackets. There's no practicality necessarily in wearing it. It's just what you saw so-and-so in a video wearing.
Right.
You're not using any real sense about wearing this stuff. It's just what looks good.
Yes.
You know? See, you know, that's how the haircuts were. There's no reason to wear a Gumby haircut.
None.
There's no practical reason to wear it. But, hey.
We thought it was funky fresh back in the day.
Yes, T said the style of my hair is like a new wave afro. I got to rock that too then.
Right.
Because he's the unusual fella. So, you know, that's the way he's rocking his hair. So, you know, and kids are being, because they see it and because it is so different and it's out there and it's defiant on some levels.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was the thing that would always attract you to it.
So, shout out to Three Times Dope.
Shout out to Three Times Dope. Yes, no doubt about it.
Y'all called them Gumbies. We just called them high right, low left, and that's it. That was the call.
That's too much to say right there.
Right. Yeah. You putting too many words in it. People are lazy as it is.
Right.
That's
right.
The reason we have shortened your name to Zay.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm talking about as far as the northern reach.
Yeah, different. Yeah, exactly. Like, y'all had a different term for it.
When they came out, it was just a whole different term for them. We didn't call them Gumbies. It was just high right, low left.
Yes, sir.
It was too much for me. That's why I didn't get one. I just had the high top fade, and that was it.
Yeah, I don't think Janie Mae and Lowell D would have allowed that in my house.
No.
That would have been one other thing for my dad to just go off on. Which
Quick shout out, though. We kind of left off some of those. We were talking earlier about accessories. Cazal glasses.
Yes.
Yes.
I had a pair of those as a young lad sixth grade. Seventh grade when I moved to Philadelphia. My mom, I saw the Fat Boys. Marky D had the black ones with the gold in the center and the gold on the sides. Yeah. Loved them. I said, all right, I want to get a pair. My mom actually got me a pair. And me not realizing, and they were expensive back then.
Yeah, they're expensive now.
They cost a lot of money.
Go to Cazal's website. You see glasses on there for $1,100.
Thank you. Yeah, but this was probably, it was like in the high 200s, which was a good bit of money back then.
Extremely high. I did
not know, of course, what this was going to mean for my well-being and health, because people came after me for those glasses, literally. Especially when we moved to Philly, it was Animal Kingdom there. Yep.
The only ones who could rock those without problem was the Dope Boys.
Right. Yep.
Or the Stick Up Kids.
Because it was always associated
like
with the Dope Boys. Those and the bowl Kangos, that's what you had to rock. And everybody just knew, oh, that's the Dope Boy right there.
I almost got jumped about three times over some Cazal glasses, man. So.
I can believe it, man, because they were. And you know, it's funny, in the movie Paid in Full, they show the dude, he's wearing the Cazals, and he's got no lenses in him.
A lot of kids did that, yes.
Because it did not matter. All that mattered is that you had those frames.
Those frames, right.
Yep. And as long as you had those frames, you were cool.
Yeah. Exactly.
So we're going to wrap this segment up because our engineer has pointed to me twice now.
Shout out to Daniel, our engineer on the boards.
Right, yeah, he's doing a great
job.
He's
in the building.
Well, he good now, though. He got his coffee, so he good to go.
Right,
at least.
He should be all right. But we're going to come back with our third and final segment, and we're going to start reaching into the 90s and 2000s. And we're also going to talk about that transition when the rappers and the rap and those affiliated with the rap game started to say, hey, you know what? We're making all this money for other people. Let's start to do our own thing.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to get at in segment 3.